You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame. All right, well, we are back for another episode. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks, Jeff. The sun shines out here, so that's great. Although I have to say it's been very frosty this morning. I went for a walk and literally nearly slid and fell on my bum.
It was
But it's one of those mornings where it's really, really frosty. Actually, I got some photos and I haven't looked back at them actually, because it was like when the sun's really bright and it's really, really frosty. So it was really lovely.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I haven't seen it here yet. It's still dark outside. So it wasn't super cold, though. So that was good. And we're going to be driving today. It's supposed to be pretty warm here. So we're going to Houston for the weekend to see our brand new nephew. So we're really excited about that. He was born in December. So we're really excited to see him for the first time. So
whereabouts in Texas are you?
We are in the Dallas area. So So we're a couple of hundred miles away from Houston. So we'll be driving up there today and that'll be a nice little weekend getaway.
Yeah. Oh, I hope you enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking forward to that. So today we are talking about appetite and hunger, satiety. And so this will be a really good discussion. And so I thought that we'd just start this off today with a quote from a book by Ellen Satter called Your Child's Weight. Yeah. Help without harming. And I thought this was a great way to kind of lead into this discussion, because hunger and satiety and our appetite are sometimes things that we overlook when we're thinking about how to address our eating. And, you know, when we're starting to, we dive in and we want to cut out this food, or we think we have to eat more of this food. And there's just so much more to it than that. And so what she writes in her, in the intro to her book, is eating is more than deciding what and how much to eat. Feeding is more than choosing food and getting it into a child. Eating and feeding reflect people's histories, their relationships with themselves, with others. Feeding a child is about the connection between parent and child, about trusting or controlling, about providing or neglecting, about accepting or rejecting. Eating is about the connection with our bodies and with life itself. Eating can be joyful, full of zest and vitality, or it can be fearful, bound by control and avoidance. So I thought that was a really good description about just how important it is that we understand that eating is just more than just putting food into our mouth. It's more than just fueling our bodies with energy and nutrients, and that there's so many other factors. And so I thought that was a good way to kind of lead into our discussion today about appetite, satiety, fullness, hunger, all of those great things.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I love what Ellen says. And, I think we both, really do like a lot of the work that she does. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the thing, is that we have become, or many people have lost touch, I guess, of what eating is all about and the enjoyment of it, because of, again, I hate to say it, but, because of diet culture again. Yeah. People have fallen into this false belief that you just need to eat enough to get through the day, and it's really not a nice place to be if you're in that place, I think. Mm-hmm. Because most normal eaters, so people that have not been, restricting or living by diet rules, eat for two reasons. They eat for satiation reasons. Uh-huh. They eat for physical satiation, and they eat for emotional satiation.
Right.
And those two are really, really important when it comes to appetite regulation. And I think the other thing to really bear in mind as well is, even when it comes, because I think people tend to forget that emotional side of things and how important that is, because again, we've got hung up in this society where we believe that emotional eating is bad, is mm-hmm. wrong. And no, that's not the case. It's when, it becomes the only coping mechanism, okay? And it becomes the only way that you know how to fix feelings. That's when it becomes, and we've spoken about this before.
Right.
But I think the other thing is that even when it just comes to physical satiation, people often need more than what they realize, mm-hmm. Because so many health plans out there are basically putting you on starvation diets, They're not they're actually just putting you on enough, I suppose, to get through the day without actually paying attention to what your calorie and your macronutrient needs are.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I can say for myself that, you know, a number of years ago, I used to encourage, you know, if you're trying to lose weight, to basically eat as little as you could tolerate. And so, you know, get into this calorie deficit, get into a big calorie deficit as much as you could, and whatever you could tolerate, and that was a good place to be. So as long as you were able to tolerate it, you were okay. And that just is, it's not sustainable long-term. And it's easy for somebody like me who has no issue dropping weight on very easily, very quickly, without feeling negative feelings about myself or about food, because those aren't areas that I personally have struggled in. It's easy for me to just apply that to then everybody and think that, oh, well, just eat less for a few weeks and then it's easy to lose weight. And I don't understand why you can't just do that because I wasn't taking into account all of these other factors that play such a role, the physiological factors, as well as the emotional and the psychological and all of those factors as well.
Yeah, and I love what you say there, Jeff, because I think this is where I kind of, whilst we are very aligned in what we do now, I think kind of probably, you know, I, again, like you, when I was in my early days with nutrition, again, I probably, you know, was more focused, like you said, on getting people to eat less in order to you know, kind of lose weight, etc. But that never... Whereas for you, you kind of, you know, couldn't understand why that might not work for somebody because of you. Whereas for me, I always, this is why I kind of changed the way that I do things. It's why I've evolved in the way that I have, because I knew how triggering that could be. And I knew what that had done for me previously.
Yeah.
So I knew that kind of the work that I was doing, whilst clients were getting results, whilst I was educating clients along the way, because I think that's one thing we've got to bear in mind is that, mm-hmm. you know, neither of us were ever macro coaches, so to speak. There was always coaching alongside it and education and stuff. I think, you know, it was when I started to realise, you know, the bigger picture and start to think about all of those other factors. And when I delved deeper mm-hmm. into things, I realised, although my gut feeling was always telling me, you know, this isn't enough.
Yeah.
You know, I need to do more for my clients. I need to be, you know, equipping them with the tools to be able to manage their nutrition and manage their health and their happiness.
Yeah, those are great points. And even if you are, you know, if somebody's listening and they are following explicitly following a fat loss approach, they are trying to get themselves into a calorie deficit and they're trying to lose weight, that's okay. We're not necessarily saying that everybody who's doing that is wrong, but what we're saying here, and I think what we were kind of planning with this episode, that while we may have our views on how people should approach that, and what we are talking about here really is going to apply to anybody, and that is that there's so much more to this than just get into a calorie deficit, because that's one of the things that is often oversimplified in the fitness community, is that, oh, it's all about a calorie deficit. Just get into a calorie deficit. Just stick to your macros, stick to your calorie target, and then you'll see results. And what we're saying is that technically that's correct, but the problem is like what I read there earlier in the introduction to this, which is there's so many other factors involved that make that realistic or not. You know, you can say, yes, the best way to build a certain physique is to go to the gym 6 days a week, do this specific training plan, follow this particular diet. And if you're an elite athlete, you know, professional athlete, that's one thing because that's your job. So you have to do those things to get that desired outcome. But for the rest of us, for everyone else in the world, almost, you know, 99.99% of people, we just need to find a way that we can sustain a healthy lifestyle, feel good about ourselves, feel good about what we're eating. And when that's the case, there are so many other factors involved. It's not realistic to go to the gym 6 days a week for most people and to train 2 hours a day and to like get this high performance optimized body and optimized nutrition in that way. We need to fit it all in with our real world lifestyle that we have, where, you know, with our kids and our job and all of these things. And that's where appetite, satiety, and hunger, these factors really can come into play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of, I guess if we're going to break it down a little bit, I think, in terms of physical satiation, mm-hmm. I mean, what should that look like and what should people be focusing on, would you say?
Well, with satiation, there's the feeling of fullness of actually having food in your stomach. And so that's one sensation. And that's often kind of that initial turning off of the hunger signal. So hunger is that desire that we have, that it's a physiological sensation in our body telling us that we should be seeking out food.
Yeah.
Do you feel that growling in your stomach, a little bit of discomfort? At the very least, whether it's uncomfortable or not, it's a signal that our body is yeah. alerting us that, hey, you should probably start. Yeah, it's biological. Yeah, you should be looking for thinking about food and that kind of thing. And that's a good thing. That's our bodies are designed to work that way. And it's great that they do. And so that initial is when we eat food, our stomach stretches a little bit, which turns off ghrelin, which is a hunger hormone. We won't go into a lot of details on that, but just know that these messengers, these hormones play a role in that. And so that's kind of the initial thing. And then from there, other things happen as the nutrients make their way into our body. And that's where then we start feeling satisfied and our body says, hey, I'm good. I don't need to go find any more food. You've given me the energy I need for the time being. So we're okay. And so yeah. that's the gist of how that works. And there's, like I said, there's these hormones, which are basically chemical messengers, and those are involved in that process. Insulin is one of the hormones that actually brings our brings us satiation. So insulin is not a bad thing.
No. Really, again, another thing that's been overly simplified.
Exactly. And then we have things like leptin, which is a hormone that's released from our fat tissue that yeah. is a satiety hormone also that, you know, the more body fat that we have when things in our body are working well, then it's releasing more leptin, and that additional leptin that's being released kind of dials up down our desire to get more food and those kinds of things. And so you can see how all these wonderful messengers within the body work very well together if we allow them to.
Yes.
The problem is we often try and override those things, and we can override them. But the problem is we're basically fighting against our body when we're trying to do it too much. And each person is going to be different in that regard too. Some people can, you know, when they are really hungry, it really isn't that bad and they can tolerate it and it doesn't consume them. Other people, their body just responds in a different way and it makes it almost impossible to fight that urge. And then factor in those emotional things from childhood or the abusive relationship that you're in or the death in a family that you just recently experienced or whatever it is. Now you've got this much more complex issue than just, you know,
and
calorie
I think
deficit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the thing. And when it comes to being satisfied, when it comes mm-hmm. to, you know, satisfying your hunger, so to speak. I think that, you know, it's so important to remember that, yes, you've got, it's about being in touch, isn't it, with those hunger and fullness, those biological hunger and fullness cues.
Right.
While the physical, they are the biological mechanisms that tell you that you need food.
Yeah.
But alongside that, of course, you've got satisfaction and you've got pleasure. Mm-hmm. So if you are not getting any satisfaction or pleasure, if you're making food choices solely based on the calorie content, solely based on what you think is going to fuel you and not taking into consideration the satisfaction and the joy and the yeah. pleasure and the memories that are evoked, if you're not allowing that to happen, you are now, you know, the chances are you're never really going to be satisfied with your food choices. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this is why often we can feel that we're driven to eat when we're not hungry physically.
Right.
Because emotionally, we haven't satisfied our hungers. Does that make sense? And I think, does that make sense? It's the first time I've said it.
Yes.
And I think all this comes down to as well is being relaxed around mm-hmm. food. It's about letting go of the anxieties. It's about letting go of guilt and shame. It's about letting go of, you know, constant restriction. Because if you're not relaxed around food, you're not going to be getting that emotional satisfaction from it, that emotional satiation. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the important reasons that we talk about, you know, if you want to eat a brownie, eat a brownie. If you're craving a brownie, go eat the brownie. Don't eat the diet you know, oh, don't go to a fiber one bar. It's like, okay, I have a sweet tooth. I'm really craving a brownie. I'll eat a fiber one bar because that's kind of sweet and they're okay. It's decent. And maybe that'll curb my sweet tooth. And
fiber one bars are better than some things that are on the market. But yes, but exactly. It's not going to work. You'll end up eating three fiber one bars.
Right.
Equated to the brownie anyway.
Yeah. And that's where I think a lot of people fall into this trap. And I'm not, you know, I don't mean to broad brush everybody because we are all different. Sometimes some people do really well with things like a molar light, as you've described before, where you go with the low calorie option. And in fact, my late wife found this actually worked for her. She struggled with obesity her entire life. And she ended up losing 140 pounds over the course of about an 18-month period and had been successfully keeping it there and had really worked well with that, enjoyed the process. So it wasn't a miserable experience. It just every day seemed to be more and more exciting for her as she'd learn new things and apply them. And she did find that eating, you know, 100-calorie snack pack things versus the way that she used to eat sweets and those kinds of things did actually work well for her. So some people, it does work to choose those, you know, diet food options and others. But for most of us, that really doesn't sustain for a long period of time. Maybe you can fight through it for your 8 to 12 week, you know, transformation challenge, or even 6 months, even a year or two. But at some point, it falls apart because we have this drive, like you were saying, to eat these things that we enjoy, to find that satisfaction either from specific foods that we enjoy or from those experiences that often involve those foods.
Yeah. And I've got a couple of stories on that actually that have happened this week with clients. And also as well, just going back to what you were saying as well about your late wife. And I think, again, I mean, it's difficult now because we can only speculate looking back, but sometimes, you know, I'm only, you know, you'll know better than me, but, you know, potentially, is it that she wasn't necessarily getting enjoyment out of the foods that she swapped in the end? Because sometimes we get into a habit or a routine of eating foods that we might not even enjoy because our relationship with food is a bit messed up. Does that make sense?
And
again, but I think, you know, again, because, you know, very often when people start, I've had this. In fact, this reminds me of a client today, a client that I spoke to in the week. This isn't what I was going to mention. I'll mention the other bit. But she said to me that since she did my workshops and slowed down and started to engage in what she was eating, she realized that every day she'd been eating avocado and poached egg on toast. And she said, once I slowed down and started to pay attention, she goes, I realized I don't actually like it. She said, I was just eating it because I was told I should once. And then, you know, and the converse can happen as well with other foods. You know, sometimes we can think that, you know, a certain brownie or a chocolate bar or something, you know, is going to take, if we're thinking, oh, I really shouldn't eat that.
Right.
And we spoke about this before, haven't we? And if potentially your late wife was thinking, oh, I really shouldn't eat that, but I'm going to eat it anyway, because she was coming at it from a place of that's bad, she probably enjoyed it more. Mm-hmm. So maybe when she kind of made that switch, it wasn't such an issue because maybe she wasn't actually enjoying the foods as much as maybe she thought. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's actually a great point. I think that that's the case for a lot of us, that we often eat things that we don't even really enjoy that much. And
engaging in it.
Yeah. And you think about some of the treats and snack type foods that we'll eat sometimes. I think I mentioned this before, Chips Ahoy cookies are a cookie brand here in the US, and it's a chocolate chip cookie. It's hard, crunchy. It's a cheap cookie. I mean, it's like $2 for a pack or something of a big package of them. It's just not a good cookie. It's sweet, it's chocolatey. But when you really sit down and eat it and then compare it to a good cookie, there's just no comparison.
But if you have got into your mind, which most people in the UK and most people in the US have at some point, that you shouldn't be eating cookies, that there's something to be, you know, restricted or controlled, then the chances are, you know, they're going to be more appealing. Because like I said, like we've said before, when we restrict things, our brain have got a really, really good way of making them more rewarding.
Right.
Whereas when we allow ourselves things, we actually enjoy them more. And this is something a client had said to me only this week. I've posted something about that this morning. But the thing is, as well, is that what you said before, there's one client I was speaking to last night, and he said to me, he said, something really interesting has happened this week, Rebecca. And I was like, oh, go on. And we've only been working with it through a couple of weeks. And he said, I've got all these crisps in my cupboard that I've realized I don't like. And I was like, what do you mean? Because while I was in eating, because I don't like them. He said, and the only reason I bought them was because I thought they were the lesser of the evils. Because, you know, he loves his chocolate and he tends mm-hmm. to eat. He said, I thought I'd be better off with a bag of squares than I would be eating like a family size bar of Galaxy. So I got them. And he said, to be fair, I hardly eat them. And then when I did eat them this week, I realized I didn't like them. So I'm just going to give them away because I was just trying to fool myself.
Right.
And then I had another client who sat there and he went, for initial consultation. And he said, I just can't. He says, I'm always overeating, you know, chocolate in the evenings. And I was like, okay. He's like, I need some alternatives, Rebecca. I need you to give me some healthy alternatives. And I just was like, come on, mate. You aren't paid. Anyway, I'm not going to go into, you know, I was like, you know, it'd be really easy for me to say, right, okay, instead of eating your chocolate, go and have a Muller Lite, or but that's not the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to deal, like we spoke last week, about dealing with the root cause, because I could stick a sticking plaster over it and get him to eat something different, but it would, and this is exactly what I said to him. I said, oh, okay, so have you tried that before then? He went, oh, yeah. He said, I remember I bought myself a load of Muller Lite yogurts to have instead. And I was like, how did that go? And he went, well, it didn't, you know. Yogurt salad. I was like, so don't ask me to, you know, you're not paying me to get you to do something that you know isn't going to work.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And that's something that's really important that I think even when I look back at times when I've dieted myself and done different things like that, and I look back at the food choices that I made and how I tried to fool myself into thinking I enjoyed them.
Yes.
And when in reality, what I had done was I had taken away some of the satisfaction from my eating. And really, had I changed up how I was eating, that would have been that. Well, in fact, when I've been successful in dropping some weight over a period of time, and I really look back at it, it's funny how I remember when I did this transformation challenge on bodybuilding.com a number of years back, where you do this 12 weeks and it's basically a competition to see who can get the best looking abs over a 12 week period. I mean, that's really what it is. It's basically
it sounds like a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And they always do them at the beginning of the year. And so it's after the holiday when a lot of people have put on a few pounds, their abs are hidden. They make this horrible looking video where they look sad and disgusted with themselves. And then they transform into this, you know, shaven, tanned body at the end that's photographed nicely in good lighting. And but anyway, what I found in that process was I thought, well, it all came down to this and this and this, and I attributed it to carb cycling or this restriction or doing this particular workout and that kind of thing. And really, what had happened was I just had I mean, yes, those were part. That's part of what had gone on, but it really came down to changing how I was eating prior to that. So prior to that, I hadn't really been thinking about what I was eating. I just kind of ate. And then now I changed it. And now I was actually thinking about it. I was sticking to a structure and a plan. And that ultimately is what helped me achieve it. And I could have made that process much more enjoyable had I not gone to the extremes that I did too. And so...
Yeah, and I think we should talk about that actually, about that. But one thing I also just wanted to say is that very often people feel that they've got to feel that they can't control themselves around the things that they really enjoy.
Yes.
And so they try and, you know, choose these other options. I've done it before and I've chucked things out because I thought, right, I can't keep eating all of that, you know, so I'm going to replace it with this. But, you know, well, years ago was what I did. And I remember it just doesn't work, does it? And I think the thing is, though, is that actually, if you commit to enjoying food, if you can literally, and this is really hard, and this is the one thing that my clients find the most difficult, it is allowing unconditional permission. It's allowing themselves to actually, you know, enjoy the foods that they enjoy without any control, without any restriction, without thinking tomorrow I've got to exercise X amount, or without, you know, because the thing is that once you do, though, you will be so much more satisfied on less. And this is the thing, is that you will find if you can, you know, do the work that you need to eradicate all of those rules, etc., then you could eat the amount of chocolate that would be the same equivalent calories wise to a Fiber One bar and be satisfied.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
And I was speaking to somebody and he was telling me that because he buys these popcorn, everyone's raving about, you get these popcorn bars or something, mm-hmm. which, you know, you can buy them in Aldi or Lidl, I think, in the UK. And they're like 99 calories or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, they're really great. They're a really great sweet substitute. I was talking to someone the other day and he's like, well, I ate three of them. I ate three of them in the space of about half an hour. And I was like, you know what? That was like more than if you'd have just gone away and had a Kit Kat.
Yeah.
You know? So it's crazy, isn't it? But I think we should go back to what you were talking about, structure and stuff as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point to make with all of this too, is so when you give yourself this unconditional permission to eat what it is that you enjoy, you also have to give yourself, unconditional permission to stop eating too.
And
understand that there's a two-way street here, and that structure that we've talked about at different times, where we're sticking to some kind of a consistent way of eating, times that we're eating, that's important in that. And we have to give ourselves that permission, that not only do I have permission to eat what I want, but I also have permission to stop. When there's still food on the plate, maybe I've had my steak and there's vegetables there, or I decide not to eat vegetables. So we have to give ourselves permission to not eat certain things at a particular meal and to eat more of something at another meal. All of those different things are really important too.
Yeah, and I've got, again, this came up again with the same client. I was telling him about the squares last night, mm-hmm. and he said to me, you know, because with a lot of one of the questions I always ask with my clients in the initial consultation is, you know, what signal, you know, how do you know when to stop eating? When my plate's full, when my plate's empty,
yeah,
or when the pizza's all gone. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so external, you know, external cues.
Yeah.
So obviously, well, we're going to work on that. And it's funny because exactly that, you know, it's about also getting your head around the fact that you can leave things on your plate, or you can. And this is what my client said to me last night. He said, oh, something else happened. He said, it's never happened before. He said, but I threw away a third of a pizza. He said, you know, in the past, it was like, I can't throw away food, you know, and it's like, but I did. I knew when enough was enough. And I threw, you know, and so he's challenging all of the beliefs that he's kind of grown up with. But it's interesting because a lot of that does stem from what we're taught as children, you know, in the days when you had to finish everything on your plate. But and as a parent, this again does bring me on, and it triggered me to think about something like with Luca recently, and he ate everything on his plate but left his vegetables. And as a mom, I'm like, and we've spoken about this before, haven't we? But this wasn't about because he was going off veg. He'd obviously eaten everything else. He was full. He didn't want any more. But the one thing he left was his veg. And, you know, and I'm like, finish your veg. And I was thinking, I was like, no, I'm not going to force him. He needs to know that it's okay. It's okay to leave something on his plate, because if I force him to finish that on his plate, I'm going to have the same conversations with him in 20 years as I'm having with my clients.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just such an important aspect of this whole thing, is this giving yourself that permission there on those different levels. And
and sometimes what can be really worthwhile, especially in the beginning, definitely, mm-hmm. is to have a structure in which to practice that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. So what kind of structure do you tend to encourage people to follow when it comes to managing their appetite, their hunger, the satiety?
I think if somebody has, you know, is completely out of touch, which they usually are when they come to me, you mm-hmm. know, when clients come to me, and it's funny because one of my clients said, you know, this week, she kind of said, you know, save the best till last. She'd been on diets for 20 odd years. Oh, and, you know, and so if you've been trying every diet going, the chances are you have completely lost touch with, you know, your hunger, your satiety, what even satisfaction means, etc. So I always try to encourage clients to get into a regular routine. Mm-hmm. Now, the default, of course, is to have your three meals a day and then 2 to 3 snacks a day. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, this does vary. So I've got one client who felt that he was eating breakfast for the sake of it. So we were like, okay, you don't necessarily need to eat as soon as you get up. You know, maybe you need to eat a little bit later in the morning. Let's look at then how we can build a structure from that point.
Right.
But, you know, definitely, like I said, you know, rebuilding trust in your body means feeding it regularly so that it trusts, because this is the thing, if you're going to give yourself unconditional permission to eat and to stop mm-hmm. at meal or snack times, you then, your body then needs to trust that there's going to be something else coming up
soon.
You know, you're going to be fed again soon. It's the same with children, isn't it, when we talk about the division of responsibility. So I always try and I do always try and encourage that with clients. And often clients will be, I had a new client who started yesterday, and whilst he did have some semblance of a structure, he said to me just when we were talking, he said, God, I've just realized I'm not eating enough in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not allowing myself to eat enough in the day because of the diet rules that I used to stick to when I was in my 20s, you know? So, yeah.
And then it makes it difficult then to regulate your appetite later on. So when you're going into meals too hungry, then you're less likely to make the choices that are going to be best for you. You're also going to be less likely to enjoy it because some people end up going in so hungry that they essentially attack the meal and don't even get the enjoyment from that meal either.
And I think this is where people can't get their head around it. Mm-hmm. Because they are not, you know, they are often letting themselves go too hungry, so that when that happens, you're not going to feel like you can allow yourself unconditional permission because your biology is kicking in, you know, and your emotion is kicking in. And so everything, you know, you don't feel in charge anymore because you are so disconnected. Your mind and your body are so disconnected. Mm-hmm. And this is why it's really, really hard for people to get their head around thinking, I can't go to a meal and think I can eat as much as I want and what have you. Because 9 times out of 10, they've been starving themselves in the past, or they've exerted so much control that it just feels unnatural. But actually, it is the most natural way, isn't it? But with this client that I was talking to you about, where he wasn't allowing himself to eat enough in the day, one of the biggest things he wants to tackle is, what do you think? Overeating in the evening. He's binging in the evening, you know?
Yeah. And it makes sense too. When you go in there, your body is going to be craving a high amount of calories, a high level of energy intake, because again, those biological processes that we talked about, they're driving us to feed us. Our bodies want us to fuel them, to feed them, and to give them the energy that it needs. And so, so that's just such an important aspect of that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things to consider as well is, you know, is to make sure that when you are, I mean, of course, you need to make choices based on, like I said, on pleasure, enjoyment and satisfaction, mm-hmm. but also thinking about, you know, what's going to keep you physically satiated, you know, thinking about not restricting, you know, if you do actually allow yourself the foods you enjoy and get pleasure out of, the chances are you're going to be covering all the macronutrients as well that you mm-hmm. need. Yeah. Whereas when you're coming at it from a place of restriction, you're probably going to be minimizing your carbs, or you're going to be limiting your fat, mm-hmm. or you're going to be like heaping up on protein because everyone says a high protein diet is best and you shouldn't worry about anything else. Does that make sense? So then there's an imbalance then, isn't there? And as we know, and you know, as you've been doing a lot of work around, we need to make sure that, you know, in order to tide ourselves over and to keep our bodies in charge, we need to make sure that we are, you know, satiating ourselves appropriately.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point because, you know, this week I had put together an illustration of kind of how the different macronutrients affect our hunger, our appetites, our satiety over time, and the importance of including those things and those things that we enjoy in each one of our meals and snacks. And so we talked here about the structure, and I think the structure is important as far as the time is concerned, but it's also important as far as what we're feeding ourselves to. One of the things that I often will tell parents is that handful of goldfish crackers, I don't know if they have goldfish in the UK, but goldfish are, they're little fish shaped crackers that basically they're orange and they're kind of cheese flavored. And they're a popular snack item here for parents with kids because kids seem to like them, or animal cookies, those animal crackers or those kinds of things.
We get stuff like that. And Lucas just walked in and just piped up and said, yeah, Mom, I know what those animal
Yeah, but you know, when we give our kids that kind of a snack, or when we give ourselves a handful of pretzels and think that that's a snack, the problem with it is that, yes, it satisfies that hunger for a brief moment at the beginning of it, but it doesn't carry us over very far. And so it is important to, within the context of this structured timing of meals, also to have some kind of structure in how we're putting our meals together, not rigid rules, but just being mindful and thoughtful of what we're including in them. Understanding that if I'm going to give myself a snack for the purpose of sustaining me until my next meal, so that I go into that next meal with some level of hunger, but not famished, then I need to include more than just a handful of goldfish or a handful of pretzels. I need to include some fat and protein also with that, because each one of those macronutrients impacts our body in a little bit different way. It over time, you know, the sugar and carbs, they go in much quicker and knock out that our appetite much quicker, but it doesn't sustain us. But if we add in some protein, it takes a little longer to kick in, but it carries us over longer than the carbs themselves will. And the same with fat. Fat slows down things also, and again, can help carry us over. So when we combine all three of those and don't cut them out or restrict them, then it can carry us over and really help with sustaining us from one of those scheduled meal times to the next. And ultimately, then that prevents us from overeating and also just enjoying life more, feeling more satisfied with our eating in general. And so it's kind of a win-win. Plus, it's much more enjoyable when we include fat and carbs together than just one or the other. And the same with including protein. It just gives us a nice, enjoyable snack or meal.
Well, this is why, you know, we're getting so, you know, why do you think, you know, processed foods, highly palatable foods are so enjoyable? Because they do, they're a combination of those things,
right?
You know, not always the protein, but they are a combination of sugar and carbs, etc. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that, obviously we're not advocating you should be eating overly processed foods, but what I'm just saying is, you know, we get satisfaction and enjoyment from making sure that we're getting a variety of nutrients, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think, and this is the thing where it comes to, I think a lot of people feel that they need to cut out sugar, because they don't realize that by, you know, they're like, oh, it just makes me feel so terrible and I have crashes, etc. And like, yeah, if you're just eating sugar on its own, if you're not having it alongside something else, that's exactly what happens. You go, you come down, you know, but you don't need to be cutting out sugar. You just need to be thinking about what else you need to be including.
Right.
So what do we always say? It's funny because I speak all the time, and we speak all the time about what people need to be included in the diet. So what else? And it's funny because I do the same with my coaching when I'm talking to clients and I'm digging deep, and it's like, how are you feeling? Okay. What else? You know, so it's always what you can add, what you can. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause often it is, it's just a matter of adding a little bit in there, and then that may help with whatever it is that you're struggling with there in that particular area, rather than trying to force yourself to cut it out. And again, it comes down to that satisfaction, that enjoyment of the food. And if we're not enjoying it, then we are more likely to continue going and trying to find that enjoyment. Makes it hard to resist that. But if we satisfy that hunger, that desire in us, one thing that's really important to point out here is that you may be, if you don't have control or if you're not in tune with your internal appetite regulation system, then you will still tend to go in and end up overeating until you do. If you start, like, you can't just give yourself unconditional permission to eat anything that you want and not start dealing with getting in tune with those internal cues, because then you will just end up going off the rails, which is what people are afraid of when they hear intuitive eating or these kind of internal regulation mechanisms. They think, well, if I just give myself unconditional permission to eat, then I'm going to do this. But it's like, no, once you get in tune with that and realize I can stop eating whenever I'm satisfied too. And I can stop eating before I'm stuffed. I can stop eating before I'm full. I can stop eating as soon as my appetite is down to a particular level. Each person's going to be different. But understanding that and getting in tune with that and being able to know when you have reached that point is the important factor here that often gets overlooked when we think about giving ourselves permission to eat whatever and how much. So, you know, we say, well, I am giving my permission to eat as much as I need. Well, as much as I need, when you start getting in tune with all of this, starts to look very different than what you have in your mind now. It's just like with a relationship. I'm not faithful to my wife because of a rule. I'm faithful to my wife because it's just natural for me to be faithful to my wife. And so the same is can be true for our food. Is once we get in there, we stop eating, not because a rule told us to stop eating, but because we said, you know what, I'm good. I don't need to eat anymore. And when we get to that place, it really makes it a much more sustainable kind of way of eating long term. And it's something that's going to sustain whatever progress we've made, whether that's losing some weight or gaining weight or whatever it is that we've done.
And yeah, and again, I had some feedback from one of my clients today on exactly that point of, you know, because she was allowing herself that permission, she's found that she's eaten less, I think, and every client, one thing I will just point out is that often what does happen, not with all clients that I see, but with a lot of clients, is that yes, and they do go through, often they do go through a period of overeating when they initially give themselves that unconditional permission. Because it's almost like their bodies are thinking, oh my God, she's allowing me now, but she's going to take it all away again at some point. So I'm going to eat, you know. But like you just said, what I do find is that alongside getting in touch with their body cues, you know, and alongside the coaching with me, that, you know, that soon subsides. And, you know, this happened with one of my clients, Tanya, and she went through about 3 weeks when we were working together of, you know, really overeating, to be honest, to begin. Mm-hmm. And she says, I couldn't understand that, Rebecca, because you weren't stopping me from doing it. She says, but now I know, because all of a sudden then something just clicked and she was able to regulate it. And as you know, she's continuing to make progress beyond our work together. So she had to go through that short 3-week period of feeling like things were out of control to then actually know, you know, my body is, and you know, I'm working on this with a brand new client at the minute as well, because she can't get her head around it. She can't get her head around thinking, well, when I allow myself, how do I know when I'm going to stop? And I'm like, this is where you need to start to begin to trust your body. Right. Okay. You might go through a period where you feel that you can't stop, but you'll get to a point where your body says enough is enough. And what tends to happen at that point is that people who aren't receiving coaching, let's say, will then think, I can't control myself. I've had enough, but I need to start restricting again now. I need to put the rules back in place because I just can't do this. I can't allow myself to eat what I want. So they're back at square one. Whereas at that point where your body is saying to you, no, we've had enough now, you've actually made a massive part of the progress, because your body is talking to you and it's telling you, trust me now. Hey, trust me. We can regulate this now. But people don't do that. They think, no, it's not my body telling me, it's my mind telling me that I need to put the brakes on and I need to start restricting again.
Yeah, those are just such important points. And it's so easy to fall back in those habits and not give ourselves a time to adjust to that. And that's one of the things that often the coaching can really help with. And that's one of the things that I've really shifted, over the last couple of years in my way of thinking, where I used to approach it much more from, okay, somebody is needing advice on losing weight. So what do? Let's find a way that we can find an eating strategy to get them into a calorie deficit and help them sustain that as best as possible, and immediately attacking it from that perspective. But what I found is that if I can work with somebody and they will trust the process a bit to let's get a handle on how you're eating. Let's start getting into some structure here. Let's start thinking about the foods that we're choosing, and do we really enjoy them? Are they bringing us satisfaction? Are they things that are fueling us? How are we feeling after that? When we start addressing it from that standpoint, yes, it takes longer before they might start making progress if they have fat loss goals or weight loss goals or even weight stability goals. But once they hit that point and understand it and start to get those fundamental things in place, then from there, it makes it so much easier to then make that progress that they're trying to achieve. Yeah. But we often attack the symptom instead of the root cause. And when we do that, it sets us up for failure. So the symptom is, you know, I've got this body fat, I'm eating too much. And so what do I need to do? I need to restrict it. And it's like, well, no, we need to figure out why it is that you're eating so much more than what your body really needs to fuel itself. And when you start addressing that, bring those things into to a place where they are managed appropriately, then you can start to really make some progress forward.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point as well. I think that's a really great place to end it as well,
I think. Yeah, I agree.
But it has brought up another topic that I think we should cover maybe. And that's around kind of the difference that, I guess, unprocessed whole foods versus processed foods in terms of how they affect our satiety.
Yeah, that would be great. There is a great study that was done fairly recently on that topic. And maybe that would be a good, maybe we should talk about that in our next episode.
Yeah.
It would carry off of this, because I do want to emphasize one thing here. You know, we're talking about unconditional permission to eat whatever you want. But that doesn't mean that you have to eat whatever you want. And it doesn't mean that you can't make those choices based on what the science tells us as far as the response of our body. And so what Rebecca was alluding to here was this, you know, processed food does seem to impact our body in a bit different way. And so once we have a handle on things, once we start to get in touch with those internal cues and that kind of thing, then we can start to make adjustments to things within, you know, with our food choices. So they're still enjoyable, but they're made based on how we understand that those foods work. So we can now start using the food to work for us rather than against us.
One thing I will say, and yeah, I fully agree with you there, but in my experience with a lot of my clients, mm-hmm. you know, they've noticed that, you know, by increasing the variety of their foods and thinking beyond calories and thinking more about nutrients, you know, they find that actually they feel so much better. So I was talking to somebody today who had just, all they had done was start to include more fiber. They started to have more vegetables in their diet. And he said to me today, I feel so much better. I've got so much more energy. And so when you're listening to your body and you're listening to how foods make you feel, right. It's easier to make those choices. But I do think we should talk about that in another
Definitely. Yeah, that's I think that's a great way to wrap it up before we are tempted to start diving into another topic.
No, here, that's
it'd be very easy to do that. So we are going to choose to stop talking at this point, because we've given ourselves unconditional permission to talk as long as we want, but we are choosing to stop now. So thank you again for joining us for this episode, and we hope that you found this helpful, and we look forward to talking again soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Great conversation as always.